this Inspired Insider.com interview, we talk with Ido Leffler, one of the co-founders of Yes2Carrots, some of the big lessons and challenges they overcame. He talks about what was a major crisis he thought would kill the company. He also talks about what he would well up with tears thinking about, and how at one point he thought he grew too big, too fast, and what advice did he give that his wife actually told him. That and much more coming up now. Jeremy Weiss here, founder of InspiredInsider.com. I talk with inspirational entrepreneurs and leaders and how they overcome big challenges in life and business. I'm excited to have Ido Leffler. Ido, welcome.
Hi, Jeremy. Thank you.
Ido is the co-founder of Yes2. They launched an international, they launched internationally at the end of 2006, and Yes2 products, which is Yes2 carrots, cucumbers, tomatoes, blueberries?
Blueberries, grapefruit, baby carrots.
It sounds delicious, but it's sold today in over 25,000 retail points, over 24 countries. It's a number two natural beauty brand in the U.S. and can be found in Walgreens, Target, Walmart, CVS, Kroger, Bed Bath, Whole Foods. If I kept going on, it'd probably take the whole interview time. But he's also coming out with his book, Get Big Fast and Do More Good, which I have will put on my Audible wish list for sure. And Ido, thanks for spending the time today.
Oh, my absolute pleasure. This is going to be a lot of fun.
Now, we want to learn your most valuable lessons. And, oftentimes we learn our biggest lessons when there's mistakes we've made, and you've overcome a lot. You know, people hear this story and they, this was not easy to do. All right. And before we talk about some of the lessons learned, I always like to include a fun fact. And a fun fact about Ido is he's absolutely obsessed with the West Wing, and he's convinced me to probably watch every season in the next 2 weeks. So
no, I think I'm Aaron Sorkin's biggest fan. It's a little bit scary.
So tell me about the early days of the company. What was one of the big lessons or mistakes that you learned from early on?
I think early on, what we did, which a lot of companies do, is you tend to get very caught up in the hype of your company. And we grew way too big, way too fast. Now, our book is called Get Big Fast and Do More Good. So we're all about getting big fast. But there's you've got to be measured. And what we ended up doing was we ended up launching, I think in the first 18 months, 10 countries. We'd launched in 5,800 stores in the US. And we didn't have the resources or the capacity or the people to really help do that justice. So I think it's important to grow fast. You've just got to be very wary of what resources you're going to need for that. And we found ourselves sometimes, whether it was lack of personal resources, sometimes it was lack of financial resources. And fortunately, I when we started the company, I didn't have hair, but had I had a lot of hair, it would be all gone at that point.
So tell, for people who don't know, when you say launch, what were some of the products that you launched with?
So we launched 6 products in 16 stores in this small little country. You may have heard of it. It's called Israel. And we just launched just your basics, your day cream, your night cream, things like your 6 most basic products. When we launched in the U.S., we launched with 16 products. So it was Yes to Carrots was our first line, which was our call it the big sister of the lot. And it was created primarily to help nourish your skin, and it was a natural product that was designed for a mass audience.
Yeah. So when you go from the 16 stores, right, and then you grow exponentially, how do you, it almost seems insurmountable to even fulfill that.
Oh, God. When we first got that first order, it was the greatest news we've ever had and the worst news we've ever had, because we found out in one afternoon. I remember walking out and my business partner says to me, I called him up. It would have been 3 in the morning in Australia where he was sleeping. And I said, look, Lance, I've got good news and I've got bad news. He goes, what's the good news? I said, well, the good news is we've just got listings in 5,800 Walgreens stores, 16 products. The bad news is we have to get it all there in the next few months. And we ran around giving what I could only describe as 10 I have a dream speeches to the manufacturing partners. And then finally had to give a real big spiel to the Israel's national carrier, which is El Al, to convince to give us, at the time, 2 767 aircrafts to ship the stock because we didn't have time to put it on a boat. So we did.
How do you even do that? Because Israel, out of all the countries too, are very strict.
Oh, you know what? I think one of my mentors and I've learned this. He said, you know, in life and in business, it's 20% the hard work and your brains and the work that you do, and 80% good old fashioned luck. And I think we had a combination of those two. We knocked on the right doors. People could see in our eyes, and I think that's a big difference between starting a business which is just about making a dollar and starting a business which you're emotionally connected to. And people could see in my eyes. I would well up with tears at just the thought of not being able to get this done. So people could see that if they weren't going to help me, I was going to find somebody else that could. And thankfully, we were surrounded by amazing, positive people who gave us a shot.
I mean, how did you even get to, because again, you're at that point a smaller company. How do you even get to a 747?
So what's really funny is that I didn't have an appointment when I went to that meeting. So we got an order for what was going to be 5,800 Walgreens stores. We finally convinced people to manufacture all the raw materials and everything needed to get that done in the time needed. And the only thing missing was how the hell we were going to get it from
that's a big problem.
Yeah. So here I was, an Australian guy. I was born in Israel, grew up in Australia, walking into, I walked straight into the El Al headquarters and asked to speak to the person in charge of freight. It was that simple. You know, had I had written an email, nobody, I think, would have responded to me. They would have thought, who is this crackpot writing to us? And I walked in there. I was in jeans, a shirt, they just pointed me in the right direction. And I walked in there, and the rest is history.
That's great. So what were some of the other, later on, what were some of the other big lessons or mistakes that you really learned from and took home?
I think, one of the things that was really important to us as we grew, and we went through a major crisis in the company, which was a major product control issue that really I thought was going to kill the company. And so we did everything humanly possible to fix it. And at the time, I was the CEO of the company, and I was running around the world. And I neglected a large part of what this company was about, which was about this positive, exciting culture that we had built internally at the time. And our headquarters, we had moved at that point to San Francisco. And I remember coming back, and I remember seeing on my desk there was a handwritten letter. And I opened the letter, and I looked at it, and inside was a letter from one of our staff, and someone who was, at the time, he wasn't even a direct report to me. He was a little bit further down. He was in our finance team. And the letter said, "Dear Ido, you know, I hope this email doesn't offend you in any way, and you know that this is going to be a bad email."
Yeah, exactly.
And it said, "But you've let me down. You've disappointed me. I joined this company because I believed in your mission, your vision, your dream, your positive nature, your what this brand stood for. And over the past month or so since we've had this crisis, the whole office is down because they sense your mood, they sense you being down and everything else." And I had to sit back, and you know, my initial response was in my head was, you know, how dare he? Doesn't he know that I'm trying to save the company and everything else? And then I sort of really looked into it and went, you know what, he's right. I got too much into the stuff that I am not the best at, B, don't enjoy doing, and as a result I was letting my team down, the company down, and our customers down effectively. So at that point I made a decision that I did no longer wanted to be the CEO of the company. I wanted to be the founder and the face and the person who could really set the vision and culture of what we were doing. And that single letter by a good friend, by a guy called Brian, changed the course of my career and probably changed the course of how I live my life.
That's great. Yeah, thanks for sharing that. What specifically did you realize that you weren't good at that point?
Well, I had known for a while that I'm not the greatest guy when it comes to the details of the numbers and the forecasting and the putting together sales plans. I'm the guy, I love taking people for dinner. I love flying around the world and meeting people for the first time and telling them the story about what we were about. I love coming up with PR plans and marketing strategies and tactics, and I love that. That's the thing that I'm good at. There are people in the world who are fantastic at running, companies and running the intricate details of what needs to be done, of setting forecasts, of getting all these things done, which is critical to a success of a business. And I think what a lot of founders don't do is, or they don't realize, or they realize it too late, is that they are not the best at everything. No one is the best at everything.
Yeah.
And so for me, I'd realize that I was very open about my failings and was willing to embrace them.
So what do you do at that point? Because it's your baby. You've created this company. What do you do next?
You take a leap of faith. And more than anything, I took a leap of faith. We went around. I consulted with my business partner and with our board and with our investors and let them know that this is how I was feeling. And we went about finding the polar opposite of me, somebody who could do these things, who enjoyed doing the things that I was not good at and didn't necessarily go the other way in terms of that didn't necessarily conflict with what I'm doing. And we found her. She's an amazing in a woman by the name of Joy Chen. She's an incredible CEO. She's actually was named CEO of the year here in San Francisco this year. And we found someone who completely complimented me. That we have a philosophy at Yesto where we don't employ people, we adopt people. So we brought her in. She became part of the family from day one. We gave her all the trust in the world, and she's proven to be an amazing partner.
That's great. You seem to have that positive, I mean, the whole name of the company is positive. And, fighting through these challenges is not easy. What do you think on when times are low? What was something that influenced you when you were growing up?
I grew up in a family that we immigrated from, we immigrated from Israel to Australia when I was 4 years old. And it was an amazing, transition for me as a child to come into a country where we virtually knew nobody, and to see my family flourish in that environment. We did exceptionally well. We were very lucky. We were, very successful immigrants. But unfortunately, the sad part of the story is that at some point my family lost everything that we had built. And to see how my family unit got together, my brother, my parents, how we all, combined together as a unit. And my parents, who I remember, they sat us down in their car. They were picking me up from school, and my dad announced to us that we had just lost everything that we'd built over those years.
Wow.
But his, you could tell in his eyes that, that he was devastated, and we turned around as a collective family unit and said, don't worry, we'll do it again and we'll do it together. And so that was a big grow up fast moment for me.
Yeah.
And but even in the lowest of times, my parents were still upbeat, positive, good people and happy people. And my entire, my dad's philosophy of this is, life is a marathon. It's not a sprint. You got to go with the good and the bad. You've got to drink. You've got to relax. You've got to take time, and you've got to, in the end of the day, if something's not right about your life, you are the person who's empowered to make that change. So I prefer to look at things as not just being, you know, glass half full. I look at things as though the glass is overflowing, and you know, you've got to enjoy everything and every opportunity that life gives you. And because the simple question is, why the hell not?
Yeah.
You know, you get to do this once, and we're all reminded of it, you know, with either losing loved ones or hearing about tragedies about people losing their lives too soon. And, you know, it's very easy to look at that for one day or 2 days and then kind of go back to your regular life. But hey, what if you could embrace that every day?
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, obviously your dad and your family are, you know, big influences and mentors. What other good piece of advice that you've gotten from a mentor that's been valuable to you?
I think probably it's kind of funny, but my wife's a little bit of a mentor. She sat me down and when we were still dating and said to me, and it was less of a statement that she said, and it was more of an action that she took. And she said, Ido, if we're going to survive as a partnership, as in a relationship, what I'm going to need some time. And what that meant was, at the time I was coming into the house at 7 p.m. I'd usually be on a call. I'd give her a kiss on the cheek, walk to my study, and then see her at like 11 o'clock when I was exhausted and tired and just want to go to bed. And we basically created this rule in our home that from 7 p.m. till 9 p.m. we switch off. And that's now extended from 7 till way later. And you know, and certain days it could be the whole day. But that whole notion of not having of having time, not having the appendage of your phone or your email on you has changed also how I look at my life, and it's become part of my daily ritual.
Yeah. So when I email her this interview when it goes live, you're going to get huge Browning points for that one.
Oh, right? No, that's the only reason why I just mentioned that. I may or may not get lucky.
Okay, good. What's the best piece of advice that you'd have for a business owner right now that, you know, maybe they're just starting out, maybe they just want to grow the company? What would you tell them?
You know, I think the number one piece of advice I can tell anybody is that if you truly, truly believe in what you're building, and that's, you've got to really look yourself in the mirror and truly believe that this is what is your calling or what is going to be the solution for you or your family or whatever it's going to be, but what you're building is truly amazing. Surround yourself with as many positive human beings as possible that can help you drive that thing. Write down a list who are the 10 people that are the most important to help you drive that. And this is going to sound a little bit harsh, but anybody who's going to stop you achieving that, drop them. And, you know, they can still be a friend. I'm not saying don't, you know, if they've been your friend for the past 25 years, don't, you know, say, hey, you're no longer my friend. But, you know, talk to them about golf. Talk to them about, you know, your vacations. Don't talk to them about business. Only the people that you talk to about your business, surround yourself with people that are going to be, you know, whether it's positive, you know, constructive criticism's okay, but surrounding yourself with people that can really help you build your dream, because that's one of the great things, and I think it's been one of our most successful, or one of the most biggest reasons for our success, is that we've surrounded ourselves with a group of people and a community of people that care about us being successful, and vice versa.
Yeah.
And that positivity drives you to do things that you never thought you would ever do.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I have one last question. And before I ask it, I want you just to tell us a little bit more about your business. What's exciting now? Tell us about the new book coming out.
So, yeah, yes, too. We're having an incredible year. We've got a whole bunch of new products. We just launched our Yes to Grapefruit line, which I'm really excited about. And there's so many new products coming out. It's phenomenal. Our team's the most incredible group of people in San Francisco. It's just phenomenal, the diverse and exciting range of people that we've now got working for Yes2, and that's something that I'm really excited about. And on a personal note, I'm just so excited for the book. You know, get big fast and do more good. The whole concept of the book is, you know, starting your business, make it huge and change the world. And the basic premise of the book is, if these two schmucks can do it, you can too. You know,
I think you're very modest with that, but okay.
You know, we were definitely not the smartest kids in the room. We were in the classroom. We were just guys that had a vision, a mission, and a passion to make it happen. And our book, more than anything, is just a funny read that will show you that you can really do this too. You just got to apply some very basic principles, and anybody can do it. Whether it's in business, in your career, regardless of what it is, anybody can do it.
Yeah, and that's great. I'm definitely going to check it out, and everyone should. And you're just a good storyteller, so I know it's going to be wonderful. So I had two last questions. One is, you know, part of the giving back part is you donate proceeds to Seed Fund.
Yes.
Right? So tell people what Seed Fund is.
So the Seed Fund is an incredible organization that we set up. It was actually my wife's idea. Effectively, we plant organic fruit and vegetable gardens throughout the United States, and they're teaching gardens to teach kids where their food comes from. And then we have feeding gardens, which we call micro farms, through our program Yes to Hope, where we feed now over 10,000 kids in Kenya and Tanzania. And we plant these incredible micro farms around their schools. And to see what these kids and these communities can do with what we've been able to provide for them, it's life-changing when you see it. I'm so excited every time I go visit. It makes you just believe in this world being such an incredible place.
Yeah. And we'll link that up too so people can check that out. My last question is, I don't know if it's a personal question, but, you know, you grew up in a real positive entrepreneurial household. What do you do with your kids, or will you do with your kids, to kind of foster that creativity and spirit, you know, for all parents out there, including myself?
You know, that's the first and foremost is spend time with your kids. I think that's the biggest win. The other thing is, don't be afraid to put your kids on a plane. Our kids travel with us all over the world. My 4-year-old's seen more of the world than I think most people see in their entire lifetime. So is my 2-year-old, for that matter. And that whole notion of, I think that the biggest gift my parents gave me is the fact that I treated everybody the same. My parents always treated everybody the same, whether they were the CEO of a major corporation, a celebrity, or anybody. And you know, when I grew up, I was a checkout clerk at a local supermarket. You know, you never know who you're going to be meeting or talking to, or who they are, and you should treat everybody the same. And as a result, I teach my kids, and I bring my kids to meetings. I bring my kids to meet these incredible people. I introduce them to wonderful people, so they grow up understanding that everybody's the same. And if you treat everybody the same, with the same level of respect and with the same level of courtesy, you'd no longer have the fear or apprehension when you meet somebody new, regardless of who they are. And that's a huge, powerful tool. And I hope that my kids are able to, you know, meet leaders of countries and feel that they are, and talk to them just like they would their next door neighbor.
Yeah, I love it, Ido. Thank you so much for spending the time. I look forward to the book, and everyone check out Yes To and try out their carrots, cucumbers, and everything else.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. Thanks, Matt.
Thanks.
Cheers.